I believe in my powers.
I believe in my powers.
I believe in the powers of my teammates.
I believe in the power of my teammates.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
Somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way.
Look, okay, just get any blunt objects together, all right? Get cornered, bash them in the head. That seems to work out.
I mean, what are we, a team? No. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos.
Gentlemen, I'm Agent Carter. I supervise all operations for this division.
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
And wow,
angels are love.
And we're on. Welcome to the Skippy and Fanny Show.
Shady Deals with Vampires with Melissa F. Olson.
I'm Sean.
I'm Paul.
And we're here today, obviously, talking about Melissa Olson. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So we're here to talk a little bit about you as a fan and about your novella out from Tor called Nightshades, which I'm sure we'll have a few questions about. But I want to start first with the fanish questions, which is, how the heck did you become a fan of genre fiction?
Oh, wow.
Going back to that really young age, that tender age.
You know, and I'm trying to think, like, what was the tender age? Probably the first time I saw Buffy, the TV show. Because when I was a kid, my family was not really they're still not, you know, like for the most part, a comic book or fandom kind of family. We watched Lois and Clark.
as just a family.
And that was about it. And then when I was 14, Buffy was on, and I had heard about it, and I didn't really get what it was. It just seemed really like this campy thing that was happening. And so one night I decided to hate watch it because, you know, I'm very advanced as a person, and I was hate watching before hate watching was a thing.
Wow.
But no, I wanted to make fun of it, you know, and I thought, oh, I'll just watch this campy garbage show for a minute, and then sure, I can laugh at it with my friends. And I remember exactly what episode it was. It was the bad eggs where they hatch like little creatures from their home egg projects.
Yes.
I honestly remember like where I turned on the episode, and I was so hooked so hard. And at the same, right around then, I don't even know which came exactly first, but I started reading the early and great Anita Blake books by Laurel K. Hamilton. Yeah. Before they kind of had a sea change. politest way of saying that. But no, the first few books, I feel like were really, you know, huge on impressionable teenage Melissa. So that was kind of, those were kind of the roots for
awesome.
Me.
Awesome.
So what drew you to actually start writing yourself? I mean, most of the stuff, I think all the stuff I am aware of, you've written the Boundary series, and now Nightshades is all urban fantasy. So what prompted you to put pen to paper?
Well, that's kind of a ridiculous story because creative writing is my backup career. I went to USC for film, and I was intending to work in television production. After graduation, I worked briefly in television development, first at NBC Universal, and then over. And then over on the Warner Brothers studio lot. And just through ridiculous... My sliding doors moment of my life is that I was hired at NBC Universal and to, like, my dream job on the ladder. I'd been an intern there for a year. Mm-hmm. And then my entire department was laid off.
Oh, no.
And I blame J.J. Abrams for this, actually. Oh. He did kind of ruin my life. Because this was the year that Desperate Housewives and Lost came out on ABC. And they crushed NBC in the ratings for the first time in many years. Remember, NBC was like a titan of must-see TV for so long. And I didn't work for NBC Network. I worked for cable, for USA and Sci-Fi. So I worked on shows like Monk, Battlestar Galactica, Psych, all those great shows. And we were doing great. In the ratings, but money needed to come from somewhere. And so they actually raised my whole department because of the success of Lost and Desperate Housewives that year. So that would be my moment in life where if those events hadn't unfolded exactly that way, I would probably still be in Hollywood. So that was a ridiculously long story to say that I was laid off twice in the space of 6 months, and I decided to come back to Wisconsin to kind of lick my wounds and try to make some money somewhere, because it's expensive to live in L.A., especially when you're 22. Yeah. And so I moved to Madison kind of on a whim. Like, I packed up my car, or I'd made the decision on a Thursday, and I packed up my car on Tuesday, and I was just gone. I drove across the country from L.A. to Madison without, you know, a job or a place to live.
Sure.
On spec.
As one does. And I started writing, and I had never done any creative writing. I had a second degree in English literature, but I had never had a single creative writing class in my life. Wow. And just had never had any interest in making things up.
Yeah, let them go by really quick.
No problem.
Go.
Okay. So I started messing around with it. And in Madison, the university there has a really great continuing education program. And I started to take some classes, and I started to mess around with writing. And, you know, I had a lot of free time at the moment, because I was always underemployed or unemployed. And eventually I started commuting over to the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and I got my master's degree in creative writing.
Oh.
So, you know, it's just, I still think it's so ridiculous that creative writing is my, like, fallback job.
Yeah.
You know, because it's usually the thing you fall back from.
Right.
Yeah.
But it ended up working out okay.
I understand how you feel. academia was my fallback job.
Mm.
And that's turning out wonderful.
Really?
No.
Okay.
No, not really.
No, this year was the first year I went on the job market, and I was told by my director it is the worst they've seen for English academia ever.
I believe
that. I was like, well, I chose the right career path. Yeah.
I briefly taught for a community college in Madison, and it wasn't my favorite.
No, yeah, I can understand. I understand perfectly. So, in any case, so obviously, so you've had this very interesting path to creative writing.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the questions I have, given that I know of the content of your book, is Buffy must have had a very big influence on what you eventually went into in terms of your writing. I don't know what it is that gives me that clue. Maybe it's the setting, or
well,
I don't know.
You know, when I was probably eight or so years ago, I was visiting my parents, and my little sister Stephanie, who's around here always at Convergence, she was reading this book. And you know, when you see your family and there's a book on the table and you pick it up and you look at it. And the book was called Nightlife by Rob Thurman, great urban fantasy series. And I started reading the back, and then I started reading it. And I had honestly no idea that urban fantasy was a genre. Like, I had read the early Anita Blake, but I didn't know there was more at the time. So I read Nightlife, and I just, you know, immediately fell into reading every urban fantasy I could get my hands on. And I promised myself, this is at around the same time that I started writing, and I promised myself that I would not write an urban fantasy unless I could think of something that I hadn't seen done before. And you'll notice my very careful wording there. I'm not claiming to come up with something brand new, never thought of in the history of literature, but, you know, by then I had read quite a lot of books, and I had realized that it's a very saturated genre and a very saturated market. And I wasn't going to throw myself into that and think that I could compete with other people unless I could come up with an idea that I felt was original enough and that I'd never seen.
So before we get to your new novel, let's talk about your old stuff, because listeners might not know about it. So tell us a little bit about the Boundary Books.
Actually, the Boundary Books is my second series.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
So tell us about your first series. Then
way to use Google, guys.
Yeah, we're terrible at this job.
The idea that I'm talking about that I kind of came up with that I hadn't seen was the idea for something called a null, which is a person who negates magic in a given space. So if we're in a world where vampires and werewolves and witches all have power, a null walks into the middle of them, and for a space all around her, they are now human again. Mm-hmm. With all the vulnerabilities and advantages that humans have. So there are a lot of practical applications for this, actually. Sure. If I'm a null and you're a vampire, but you need to go into a bank at 11 o'clock in the morning, I'm your girl. Like, I can make that happen for you. Walk in the sun, the whole bit. As long as you stay within, you know, 10 or 15 feet of me. So that was the idea that I had. And I jumped into, as soon as I had it, I also wanted to write about the people who have to clean up crime scenes was something else that I happened to be interested in. There was this show called Moonlight, one season wonder years ago, really great show. And this way, way like third, fourth peripheral plot line was that there was this group of badass women who, when a vampire like murdered someone and made a big mess, they were called in to just make it vanish. And I was like, why isn't that the show? Like, that is fascinating. So I kind of took these two ideas of, like, first of all, a null, and then a person whose job it is to erase any evidence of the supernatural world, and combine them into a character. And as soon as I did that, I knew her. Like, I just knew Scarlett Bernard. So my first book is called Dead Spots. And her name is Scarlett, and she's a null, and, like, 22, 23... very much, you know, kind of a little lost and sort of recovering from some things, much like Lex later. And so that was a trilogy that came out. And when I wanted to write a fourth Scarlet book, my publisher, 47 North, said, you know, well, what else have you got? And I said, man, I got nothing. But I'd like to stay in this world. I'm really having a good time in this world, and I'm really having a good time writing nulls. So what? How about I do a spinoff? And that actually became Boundary Crossed, okay. Which is not, the main character of Boundary Crossed is not a null. She's actually an Iraq war veteran who does not know that she is a witch specializing in the dead. Because, in my first three books, I occasionally alluded to witches who specialize in boundary magic, which is magic that crosses the line between living and dead.
Okay. Sure.
And most witches, average witches, jack of all trades kind of witches, they don't mess around with that because that is dangerous. Sure. And you can die. But boundary witches are born to it. They specialize in it. And you know, once you come up with something like that, you get to play. You get to have so much fun with like the Inquisition and looking at these different. Like, I know so much about the frickin' Inquisition now because I've done so much research on it. On the Inquisitions, I should say, Spanish was only one of them. So anyway, the main character, she's an Iraq War veteran, and I think the first line of the book is. The third time I died was early on a Tuesday morning a week after Labor Day. Because boundary witches can't die. The magic that allows them to have this connection with death doesn't let them die. And so she dies at the end of chapter one. And which was kind of a different move for me. Sure. And, you know, she dies protecting her niece, who... she does not know that they're vampires, but a couple of vampires try to take her niece away. And she, you know, attempts to stop them and is killed. And later we find out that her niece is actually a null. And her niece is, like, I think 18 months old in the first book.
Ooh. So powers are, I didn't mean to interrupt, so powers have come right from birth rather than coming right. into birth like it's, like coming to a person like it's, say, a... teenage years or whatnot.
Right.
You start from the beginning. Okay.
Nope.
You. Please continue.
No. Well, so because I...
Pause.
I still wanted to keep writing about nulls, but I didn't want to just write another character who was exactly like Scarlett, you know, another sure. null main right. character. So instead, she's a witch, and she's using her connection with the dead to help protect her not even two-year-old baby null niece.
Right.
Aww.
And I really wanted to write a protagonist that was different from Scarlet, but I didn't just want her to be the opposite of Scarlet, like the Bizarro World Scarlet, because sure. to me that's just kind of too easy. So Lex is a soldier, a former soldier, and that's really like her DNA, you know, and I often think of them in terms of their sort of signature hero. And Scarlett's very much a reluctant hero. She's John McClane. You know, if someone else came in and was willing to save Nakatomi Powers, like, he would have been out of there. Towers, I mean. He would have been done. Like, he didn't need to be the guy to save it. You know, he just needed it saved. And there was no one else, so he steps in. And Scarlett is very much like that. She does not want to save the day and kick butts and take names.
Right.
And she doesn't have any, like, ninja skills. You know, she's actually a very ordinary human. Yeah. So Scarlett has always been more of a reluctant hero, and that's very key to her personality. But Lex's sort of signature hero would be Captain America. I mean, she's just driven to save people, which I think is really fun, a fun juxtaposition with her magic, which has to deal with the dead and death.
Cool.
So that's kind of where my second trilogy comes in. And the third book just came out in June. So I've actually got two releases within, like, 28 days.
Wow.
This summer.
So it's a Boundary Born is the new book.
Yes. And that's the third Lex book. So I did three Scarlet books, three Lex books, and now I'm actually going back and writing a new Scarlet Bernard novel that's set, like, 3 years later when she's a little bit more grown up.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, it's... So that's kind of where, you know, I got my start and where what I've been doing with urban fantasy. It just happened that Boundary Crossed was the book that really took off for me.
Hey, I apologize thinking that was your first novel.
No, it's a completely understandable thing because that book was chosen for a promotion called Kindle First. And
that's where I picked it up and first heard about you, yeah.
And because of Kindle First, you know, many, many people who might never have found me found Boundary Crossed. And my publisher did something very smart and put the first chapter of the first Scarlet book at the end of Boundary Crossed. So a lot of people read Boundary Crossed and then immediately went back and read Dead Spots in the Scarlet books. So, you know, most people, one way or another, found me through Boundary Crossed.
Cool. So, so on that subject, switching over then to Nightshades, which is out from Tor, novella. I'm gonna wait for that because that'll be loud. Go away, planes. Why are you flying over here?
Do they not understand that we have business to conduct?
No.
I told them. I sent a lot of messages to the city council, and I guess Minnesota doesn't like to listen. Okay, so I'm just gonna repeat that part.
Sure.
So switching tracks to Nightshades, which is out from Tor, your new novella, where does that fit into all of this?
Nightshades is a completely different world.
Entirely different,
and,
okay.
I mean, and, you know, it's funny because it is about vampires, again.
It is.
But it's much more of the, like, Blade variety of vampires.
Ooh, or
like,
Buffy?
No, because Buffy is a world where many species exist.
Okay.
Whereas Blade is a world where there's humans and vampires. I mean, there's Blade 2, there's a whole thing. But
right.
Basically, at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's the major only supernatural.
Right.
Sure.
So, you know, with the old world books, I had built kind of this big system. And what I really wanted to look, I wanted to focus more and also kind of, from a macro level, I wanted to look at the moments right after the supernatural is discovered. Because all urban fantasy kind of falls into two categories. Either the whole world knows about magic, or nobody knows about magic and we have to keep it under wraps. And so I spent 6 books writing the second kind. The whole, nobody knows about magic, we have to keep it quiet, let's not say anything. But I also enjoy reading the other kind of book where, you know, people know about magic, they know about vampires, whatever, and, you know, it changes our world. The Charlaine Harris books are a great example of this. But the thing that I had noticed was that books that fall into that category, they're almost always set years after the discovery is made. So, for example, Faith Hunter's books, the world finds out about magic when Marilyn Monroe, who's a vampire, tries to turn JFK in the White House. And so, but that's not the story of the book. That's just background.
That's just a world building.
That's a fascinating story, though.
I know, right? I want to read that as like a short story so bad. But no, so, you know, it's set in contemporary times, but the whole world's known for 50 years. And I found that most books were like that. Even the Charlaine Harris books, vampires have been out for years. You know, and there's a public face to them. They have a publicist, you know. And for me, I thought, where is the book that's set like 5 minutes after this discovery is made? And what would happen? Like, what would we legitimately do if tomorrow there was a news report that somebody had found a sentient creature that looked like us but had a different biology and had different nutritional needs that happened to include human blood, and this creature does not age, and seems to be somewhat allergic to sunlight? Like, what would legitimately happen? And I had this idea years ago, and I originally conceived it as a television pilot, of all things. You know, wearing my other hat, my old hat. So I had come up with that idea, that basic idea that I just mentioned, as a TV pilot. But I didn't do anything with it, because I didn't have time to learn how to write a screenplay back then, at the moment. I think I had just had a baby, and didn't have time to learn a new format.
That would do it, yeah.
But I'm glad that I waited, because when I finally sat down, you know, when I found out about this new novella division and this popularity of the format, I realized how perfectly the structure of a one-hour show would translate to a short book. Because one-hour TV shows are a five-act structure, and a novella, I thought, would work really well and respond to that format.
And page count.
Yeah, and the other reason that I'm glad that I kind of waited on writing this story is because one of the sort of ideas that's occurred to me is that if vampires were discovered and they were found to be real, I don't think people would really care. I mean, they would care in theory the way that you care about an earthquake in Japan, in theory. You know, we care about things and we're outraged and we want to help for 5 minutes. And then we want to go on with our day. And that's kind of how our society has turned. Like, there's so many things to get outraged about that people tend to do it for 5 minutes and then move on. So it occurred to me that if vampires really were discovered, everybody would explode on Facebook and everybody would do Dracula memes and it would be all very funny and intense for 2 weeks, and then we'd all move on. There'd be something else. And when that happens, what happens to the government agency that's now responsible for policing this new species? Because nobody's going to want to hear from them. The public just wants them to, like, just keep it quiet. Like, keep it out of our face.
Yeah.
Yes. We don't want to think about it. We don't want to deal with vampires. Just make sure that it doesn't get in the news. And so Nightshades is about a new division of the Chicago Bureau of Preternatural Investigations needing to open up because there are a whole bunch of murders in Chicago that have to deal with shades, which is the word for vampires that I use.
So we got to close out because we're at our time limit here, and I want to take a moment to get you to let us know where they can find all your work, your website, your secret dungeon that you keep your stuff in case you have one.
The address to my secret dungeon? I'm sorry, I cannot. It's John Scalzi's house. Go to Scalzi.com. I'm just kidding, sorry. No, I have a website at melissafolson.com. I tell everyone that the F stands for frickin'. And the best place to find Nightshades is to go through the tour.com publishing website, because they have links to everything.
Sure.
Amazon, Kobo, things I've never heard of. I'm not joking about that. So that's a really easy way to find them. And my Old World series are available on Amazon or can be ordered through any bookstore.
Perfect.
Excellent.
Well, cool. Well, thank you, Melissa, for joining us to talk about your work and you becoming a fan.
Thank you
very much.
Well, and on that note, it's not really an awkward ending, again, but awkward ending.
End scene.
Our intro and outro music comes from Nocturnia by Psychedelic Pedestrian. You can find out more about them on freemusicarchive.org, including the full version of the song. We obviously made some edits to the song, including sound effects and, of course, shortening the length. You can also support us by going to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. If you'd like to send us a suggestion, you can do so at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. You can also go to our website, skiffyandfanty.com, and check out the little suggested topic form at the top there. You can also just send us emails. You can also find us on Twitter at skiffyandfanty or on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Just search for us on there. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time.